This call is now being recorded.
Hello?
Hello, hey, how you
hey
doing?
Hey there, I think we got it going. How you doing?
Yeah, we got it. Wonderful.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I thought I had given you the correct, well, I did, I checked. I don't know what happened. Maybe it's in the phone line. So I want to introduce you real quick. Hey, everybody, this is Rainey with Fannie Lou's Children, a podcast by me. It's a nod to my shero, Fannie Lou Hamer, a voting rights and civil rights activists out of Louisville, Mississippi. We talk to people who work to exact change in their communities, as she did. Although she had two children, she couldn't have them naturally because of an involuntary hysterectomy by a doctor, a southern doctor, who, when she went in to get a checkup, he emerged from the hospital with a complete hysterectomy, something that was pretty common and that was admitted to by doctors later on in the South that it was a very widespread practice. So we talked to people who work to exact change in their community, and tonight I'm speaking to someone that I consider a friend now. His name is Shakim Amanaket out of Charleston, South Carolina. He is the executive director of a Suffolk Community Development Association, but his bio is just too long to even mention. It would take days to do a podcast with Shakim if he had that time and I had that time. So I'm going to first ask you if you would explain what is a Suffolk Community Development Association, and then I want to kind of, for the sake of time, because I know you're tired, it's later there than it is here. I want to briefly talk about how we met. Actually, I inboxed you. I think about 2017 at the end. I saw a video that had gone viral with you in the forefront of a situation with a corner store merchant and a young man there in Charleston, and I was drawn to that because of the kind of the work we're doing with the corner store merchants here in Houston as well. We formed an organization to try to bridge the gap between corner store merchants and the community. Also, is that my phone or is that in your phone? I kind of hear some noise in the background. I'm not sure if it's my phone or not.
No, that's not mine.
Can you hear it? Okay. So, we'll just keep going. Because I can hear you. I can hear you, and hopefully everyone else will be able to hear you as well. I sent you a Facebook message, and I told you a little bit about, I applauded what you all were doing down there, told you kind of what we were doing here with that, and kind of got some advice from you and asked you if you thought we were going in the right direction. And then I began to follow you on Facebook, and I'm like, wow, I cannot believe all this work that these men in Charleston are doing. The first thing I want to talk about, ask you briefly to talk to us about the Suffolk Community Development Association.
Right, thanks, Sis, and I appreciate you for having me on. So Suffolk Community Development Association, we were actually formed as a nonprofit organization that does help with certain facets of community development. We actually do leadership development and training. I named the academy after one of my best friends who passed just recently, Muhyiddin the Baha. Unfortunately, he went down to Mardi Gras to celebrate, and he ended up being murdered. The guy is in custody. Apparently, when witnesses' statement said that the guy thought he was somebody else and he was going to do a robbery, and he attempted to rob my partner and shot him. And sad part about it is my partner was just blocks away from the hospital. But since he didn't know where he was at, he was just visiting in New Orleans, he didn't know the hospital was like right two blocks
right
down,
there.
So he ended up making a complete circle and lost blood and ended up dying. In his honor,
I followed him, and he was known nationally for crossing that yellow police tape line and snatching the Confederate flag out of a demonstrator's hand on live television in South Carolina. And after speaking to you about that, then I realized that you were Mahayton's very, very good friend, and you all worked very closely together in South Carolina. I think he was a really prolific figure with Black Lives Matter there in Charleston. Is that right?
Right. Yes.
So you all you go to to go ahead and complete the dream that he had about this school. You and
right.
I don't want to leave anyone else out, because you always give respect to the people that work with you. You never make it appear as if you're doing anything by yourself. And I really
right.
like that. You said that the school, you know, you formed it to carry on the legacy of him. But guess what? I've read that the curriculum is planned to cover politics, methods of direct action, and civil disobedience. And that's what I want to talk to you about. How do you train kids in civil disobedience? I think that's wonderful. How do you train, what is that, 7 to 12-year-olds?
So it's actually dichotomized by age level and grade and skill. So when you have, like, 3rd to 5th graders, when I work with them, of course, they're basically just learning how to read, phonics. They're learning the basic of mathematics. We teach them basic history infused in that lesson. So, you know, whenever they get reading material, the reading material actually gives them a sense of race esteem, not necessarily self-esteem, but race esteem, to teach them how to be proud of who we are. Like just last week, we were kind of going over the plight of Muhammad Ali and, you know, his stance against the United States government during a time where, you know, they wanted to make a mockery of him. So we give that to the 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders. When we start talking about political education and direct action and civil disobedience, that's more for 16, 17, 18 years old. We talk to them about being able to apply pressure at certain points and understanding the demographics of, you know, where you're at. So just say you might be in a location to where a majority of the people are black. So you have a higher, you know, black population. So, you know, your message can be a little more geared directly and straightforward to that demographic. There's certain areas where, you know, you might be in a majority white population that might be conservative. So your message, we just try to really talk to them about tailoring your message to your audience and having ways to apply pressure when needed to get certain results. So, you know, I myself, I've been in a lot of civil disobedience and direct action. Some things have worked. We've gotten tangible results. Some things that didn't work. Unfortunately, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. My main focus has been education. And now we're going to move more towards a career orientation type of thing to where we're going to. So the group that I have now, I have 15 individuals. I think it's like 6 girls and the rest boys, 6 girls and 7 boys, something like that. But we just kind of got that started. So what I'm doing with that is I'm trying to get a lot of local black business owners to come in and talk to the children and give them, you know, and give them an idea of what it takes to start a business, what it takes to, you know, be an entrepreneur. Then we're going to have people who, of course, maybe went to college and have a professional career. We want them to understand what it's like and, you know, applying to a college university. Maybe they want to be a doctor or a pediatrician or whatever it is they want to be, an RN or whatever, lawyer. So we want to kind of find out what everybody likes to do, their passion, their desires, and their goals. And we're going to bring people out of the community to come and talk to them and give them guidance. So whoever has an ambition in a certain area, if we can effectively pair them with somebody in the community who has a similar ambition, then we can, that will allow them to be able to undergo a informal apprenticeship.
Wow.
You know, so the groundwork, they're going to see that it can be accomplished by a young black woman or man in that particular field, and that will give them more, you know, sense of saying, hey, I can do this. So that's kind of like the psychology behind what I want to do now.
I think that's wonderful. I do know that there is a high concentration of the Gullah Geechee culture there in Charleston.
Yes.
And you know the next question I'm going to ask you about. Mm-hmm. This ordinance with the palmetto roses with the youth, that was so exciting to me to see how you all went from A to B on that. And I know that was hard work. I mean, I followed all your pages, but you did it. I mean, it was just amazing to me when you put it together and you have a goal and you understand our youth. And I mean, it was like a reel going. It's like a live reel going, just watching your posts and watching everything that you were posting about that with these youth and the ordinance with our youth selling the what was the driving force behind that?
Well,
excuse me.
I was just watching television, and matter of fact, I was actually watching some television on social media, and I saw that there was a young boy, like 16 years old. They had pictures of him getting choked out by a police officer. So a lady inboxed me. And she said, Shaquem, you know, I took these pictures. There was a young boy getting choked out by the police. We saw the police jump out on him, and they tackled him. And at the end of the day, they said he was selling palmetto roses. So the sweetgrass tradition has always been a part of the Gullah Geechee people. We got palmetto trees. So the palmetto trees, what they do is they make roses, they make do basket weaving, they just make
beautiful.
Yes, they just make all kind of stuff. And I've been in Charleston my whole life. So ever since I've been little, what happens are young people will go and we learn how to weave these flowers, and they just go out during tourist season and they say, hey, would you like to buy this rose, $2? And the people either say yes or they say no. But they make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So what happened is, as gentrification began to settle in the city and blacks began to start getting pushed out, the whites have started capitalizing off of our legacy of slavery. So our whole tourist industry is built off of black misery and the black experience. Mm-hmm. So what the whites start seeing are how these young black children are making all of this money selling palmetto roses in the tradition. So the whites said, how can we monopolize it? So what they did is they started enacting ordinances saying that these young children cannot sell palmetto roses in the tourist area without going through the city. Just keep in mind that, you know, a child 15, 16 years old, you can't get a peddler's license. Here, you have to be at least 18 to get a peddler's license. So what they did is the young children, 14, 15, and 16, who were doing it, they created a program and an ordinance that banned them from going in the tourist area and selling the roses. Of course, you know, the young boys, they're making money, so they're not going to abide by the ordinance. So they were just still out there selling the palmetto roses. So what happened is the police department started bum rushing the young boys who were out there selling the palmetto roses. And when they started bum rushing the young boys, then that's whenever the video the video came out of the young boys being attacked by the police and getting locked up. So what we began to do is say, okay, we're going to challenge the ordinance. So I just went and got some people together and said, okay, we're going to go down in the heart of the tourist area, and we're going to shut it down. We're going to go out there and make some noise. We're going to harass tourists. We're going to frustrate. We're going to agitate. You know, we're going to be loud. And you know, it's easy to scare, you know, these white people down there because they're tourists. So, you know, if you disrupt that market, then you're going to get results. Within
so
2 weeks.
Civil disobedience as well, too, isn't it?
Bingo.
Isn't that civil? Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay.
Right.
Wow.
So within 2 weeks, I had the chief of police calling around, trying to get my phone number to sit down and meet with him and the mayor and the captain and the head of the Department of Tourism and all of that. So me and several activists, we went down and we had a meeting and we got the ordinance adjusted. The only thing that they asked us to do is mentor, coach, and if a situation arises where there's, you know, something gets out of hand, they want us to intervene. So we agreed to do that. And there are cases, because we're dealing with young individuals who don't really have the necessary skills. Some of their communication skills are off, but that's no problem. We can work with that. Sometimes their approach can be a little rough. I mean, we've had, some of the young boys maybe need the money, and they walk by a couple and say, hey, would you like to buy a rose? And the couple says no, and they, you know, tell them, you know, kiss my this and that, and, you know. So we have to get on them about that. But, you know, ultimately, they want us to police the community and those young boys down there. So that's what we've been doing. It's kind of hard because, you know, I got day-to-day things I need to do. But it's been working out for the best right now.
Well, and it also proves, I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, it also proves that legislation can be challenged and it can be changed.
Yes, yes.
With work. It just doesn't happen. You have to put in the work.
Right.
I just want to ask you two more questions.
Okay.
You got to go. Now, we're talking about civil disobedience in that particular sense, based on what you said that you all had to do. Is there a way to keep from being labeled as disruptive by the establishment when you're having to go the way of civil disobedience? I mean, it seems that most activists are people who are trying to change and fortify and strengthen the community the best way we know how, being the ones that know our people better than anyone knows our people. Knowing that people just don't wake up one day being disruptive, that racism and a lot of other isms is what causes things to be as they are today. Can these things be done fluidly, do you think, without being labeled disruptive?
No, it's gotta be disruptive. I mean, so one of the things that I've learned from being an activist is you gotta have the agitators and you gotta have the negotiators. It's gotta play out. Like, you can't have one without the other. You can't go in and do negotiations if you don't have an agitator. And if you're an agitator, you can't successfully be an agitator if you don't have a negotiator. So I think what happens is we don't understand how those two go hand in hand. So when you go in and you try not to utilize or have the threat of civil disobedience, when you go in just talking, they don't care. I mean, you can't, to racists, you can't appeal to their conscience because they lack a conscience. So in order for you to appeal to a racist, they have to know that either A, you are willing to have a group of people disturb the surrounding area to either withhold funds or to cause such a disruption to where their peers are going to say, you know what, you can't handle this situation, you have to go. So you have to have some sort of threat of civil disobedience somewhere down the line. But if you have a lot of civil disobedience and a lot of protests, but you don't have somebody to go in and say, hey, listen here, if you don't do A, B, C, or D, then these people outside are going to do E, F, and G.
I see.
And when that happens, then they'll say, okay, we need, I call it the Malcolm and Martin effect. That's something I kind of really gave it because, mm-hmm. you know, Malcolm is like, okay, Martin is like, okay, if you don't take heed to what I'm doing, then you got this guy right here who's going to come in, and he's not going to be willing to compromise, and he's not going to be willing to negotiate. So, you know, you need to accept this. So the agitators and the negotiators have to sit down and put together a plan or a proposal that is going to benefit each one, and they work hand in hand. So you can't you can't have a successful negotiation process without a threat of civil disobedience in the event that things don't work out.
I see. And protesting, in some cases, doesn't do it anymore. When I say protesting, I mean in the sense that we're holding placards and marching up and down the street. Sometimes that's not, we've done that so much that sometimes it has just become obsolete, you know, just doesn't
right.
do much. So, yeah, right. I understand that. So,
right.
one more question, and I'm going to let you go. So, back to the school. What is the vision? Because what I understand is that I think I read somewhere that did the school district donate some laptops? I know other organizations did.
No,
the school district did there.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I got school.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. So there's a program installed on those laptops that allow you all to monitor the kids' progress, to issue grades, and keep the cycle of learning going. I was pleasantly surprised to hear that.
And
because that's not something that you – so how does – in terms of issuing grades,
it's called IXL.
Does that mean – because this is a summer program, right?
Uh-huh.
Or after-school program?
Yeah, so my after-school program, the software that we use, a lot of people use it. It's called IXL. It's called IXL.
Okay.
So when you Google it, look up IXL, and I love it. Like, I really love it. I mean –
are you saying I and then XL, EXEL, or I and then the letter X and the letter L?
Right, I and the letter X and the letter L.
I got you, okay.
Yep. Yeah, I and the letter X and the letter L. So you go Google it whenever you get off, you look at it.
Uh-huh.
It's what our school district, our local school district uses. So it's basically, what it does is any area where a student is having an issue, you can isolate it. So one, just say somebody's having a problem with coordinating conjunctions or gerunds and differentiating between gerunds and verbs or trying to understand adverbs or trying to understand complex and complete sentences and compound sentences. Just say, you know, punctuation, anything, I don't know, just anything. You can actually, you know, narrow it down to that particular subject matter. You can isolate it to a particular grade level, and then you can get worksheets that totally zone in and help that person to understand what it is they need to do. So what I have done is I ordered a lot of African-centered books.
Mm-hmm.
So when the students come in, we give them an aptitude test, or we try to figure out, you know, what level they're reading on. And from there, once we find their comfortable reading level, we give them corresponding information to kind of read. We prefer always using black books, black children's books or whatever. And those are hard to find. So sometimes, every now and then, you got to use the European, you know, stuff too. But at least, you know, you're surrounding them with black excellence. So,
sure.
You know, that's our goal. So that's kind of like how that is. But you like it. You check it out. IXL.
I sure will. And how can we help? How can people who are listening to this podcast or people, you know, how can other people help? How can people help you? Help in that, help with this, your works in this academy. And, how can we help?
Okay. So, if you go on Facebook, you know, my name is Shakem, S-H-A-K-E-M, Akhet, A-K-H-E-T. And also the school is called the Muhyiddin Dabaha Leadership Academy. I'm going to spell that. Muhyiddin is M-U-H-I-Y-I-D-I-N. Dabaha is D-apostrophe, B-A-S-B-A-S-H-A, Leadership Academy. If somebody wants to help, send African-centered elementary school books. That's children's books.
African-centered elementary school books. Okay.
Yeah.
Elementary.
Just send the books. That's if anything we can use are books. Books that have black representation. That's
okay.
Right.
And you can, after this, you can text me the address. I'll put it all in the show
notes.
or any other information. So I'm going to let you go. But I want to tell you, sure. it's funny, two things that was really, and people can go later in. You have a YouTube station, don't you?
Yes.
Do you have a podcast of your own?
Do I have what?
A podcast. I know you do a lot of lives on YouTube.
Right. I do. I mean, I don't have like a particular date or anything set up. I'm just kind of like impromptu, you know.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Something. Oh, that's fine.
Right.
And you can tell me where the books can be sent. But, and people can go to your Facebook pages. Well, actually, they can Google your name. And guess what's going to come up when they Google your name? Two things that I want to talk about tonight, which I would suggest that people Google your name and look at two particular videos. One was where the FBI interrogated you.
Yes.
That was so funny. And then the one where you actually met with the leader of the White Secessionist Party.
Yes.
In Charleston.
Yes.
And that was just, you know, it was just so eye-opening. And so, and there were articles all over the place written about that, especially when you met with the guy with the Secessionist Party. I forgot his name, but you know, people can Google that. So
let me trip you out about that. Now, Tyler and I actually grew up in the city together, so I've known.
This is the guy with the Secessionist Party. Okay.
Right. Tyler, he's actually the shot caller for, you know, like, I mean, I've been in prison, right? So anybody who's been in prison, you kind of know, like, different groups have different shot callers. So, you know, with him, if anything goes down with the white boys, if he puts his fist up, they move. If he puts his fist down, they stop. So they respect him. Same thing with me. I got a lot of people, if I say, yo, chill, they're going to chill. If I say go, they're going to go. So there was an incident in Charleston where a lot of the white liberals were... See, a lot of the white liberals, I really beef with a lot of them, and I'm going to make this short because I know, but I beef with a lot of the white liberals because they try to project the direction of the black community. And the black community, it's probably like this everywhere, but we allow them in our churches, we allow them in our meetings, we embrace a lot of the white liberals who don't have our community at heart. So there was an issue where we were fighting. We're fighting for better education. We're fighting for better infrastructure in our communities. So what happened is that the white liberals, instead of, you know, letting us direct the movement, they wanted us to start fighting about Confederate statues and Confederate monuments. So my whole point to my people was that they're never around when our issues need to be addressed. But when they feel they want a grandstand, they'll go out in their grandstand. So what me and Tyler did, I told Tyler, I said, listen, tell your people, have nothing to do with this rally that the white liberals are putting up. And I'm going to tell my people, you stay away. We don't have nothing to do with it. And then we let the white liberals go on their own.
This is how you were known as not really caring about or having an issue with the statue being removed.
No, well, see, this is my thing, right? At the end of the day, if they take that statue down, it's going to do nothing. It's going to do nothing for our condition as a people.
The cause. I got you. I understand.
It's going to do nothing. So, you know, we have a severe inequality of taxpayer dollars that are redirected in white communities versus black communities. We have a lack of streets in our community. I mean, not streets, sidewalks. Residents have been complaining. Children have almost been getting hit by cars because we don't have sidewalks. Residents have been complaining about stop signs, you know, speed bumps. You know, we go in the community and we probe and we ask them what are their concerns. I mean, they don't have playgrounds. There's a lack of green space. So, you know, parks and recreation, they don't spend enough money in these areas. They put these big old pools in white neighborhoods and black neighborhoods. You can't even get a half court basketball, you know, net. So we're fighting these things, and we don't expect them to assist us, but they don't assist us in this. But then all of a sudden they want a grandstand about a Confederate statue that's in a white community that we don't even drive by. So, you know, black people were getting so caught up in that, I wanted to let them know, because see, we don't mess with the Confederates anyway, so it's not like nobody follows them. So I got with Tyler and I said, listen, you tell your people, go this way, I take my people, we worry about our issues, and let them white liberals go out there in front of that statue and they handle it on their own. But I was telling my people, we don't need that.
And I hate to say this, but, you know, it rings true for me from what I've seen through the years. We're so oppressed that we get a little overcome with the idea of possibly having an ally in white people,
right,
you see.
Right,
and so
right.
We forget about our own issues, what affects us, because
right.
We really want to believe that we have allies out there.
Yep.
And so, yeah. So, listen, I'm not going to hold you anymore. I know you've had a long day. Thank you so much.
No,
I really
you.
Appreciate it. And I suggest that everyone who listens to this podcast will assist you all with books. I know people that I can directly get in touch with also about getting some of the African-American-centered and themed reading materials to you all. You can text me where to get them to, and I'll put that in the show notes. Thank you so much. I'm going to have this I'm going to go ahead and edit this a little bit and put it up and then possibly have it on SoundCloud tonight. If not, it'll be in the morning. I'll tag you in it
if
it's okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And
yes,
I
ma'am.
Suggest everyone follow you and your work. And thank you so
yes,
much
ma'am.
For being a guide to me and a friend. And thank you for consenting to do this podcast.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you. You take care. Enjoy the rest
of your day. All right. Bye-bye.